It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all, welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on Test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. In today's video, we have a much sought-after returning guest, Manjunath. Hello, Manjunath. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ajit. Pleasure to be there as well.
As always, it'll be fun. I'm expecting to have this chat. We have a decent number of games to discuss, what with the Asia Cup starting and a couple of T20 series underway and so on. So, let's see. I think before we get into the games and such, I know you recently started your new job. How is that treating you? How are the work hours?
So far, it's going well. So I'm getting a little bit of time, like in the evening. So that is good. But I can still follow cricket and other stuff. So that's a good thing.
I know you're a doctor. I hope you don't mind me mentioning it. That the rest we can leave out. But how difficult is a doctor's life? I mean, we read all of these things and we also see a few things. We talk to our friends here and there, but just a generic doubt, you know, is a doctor's life very tough? Because one, I know the things you deal on the job is tough. We know it, but also the hours are very tough on you, even for an experienced guy like you.
Actually, the main problem is like, it's like how difficult you want to make it for yourself at the end of the day. So if you have like some hobby, so that's what, if there are any doctors listening into our podcast, so the only thing is, if you have a hobby, please develop that and try to give time to that, so that it will make you much more efficient in your primary vocation. So that is what that is how it has worked for me so far. So you should aim that 1/3 of your life should be your practice, and not in terms of time, but I'm saying in terms of your life. So this is something which one of my bosses has told me. So far, I found that it is working, and I try to follow that. So I try to find the remaining 2/3. Like if you don't have the remaining 2/3, you please find that. Of course, 1/3 is family in that, and 1/3 can be some hobby or something that you like to, that should make the difficulty, at least it is toned down.
Good to hear. But then it's always, I've heard like crazy hours and crazy stress. I've spoken to residents. I mean, this is a while back when my own closest friends were doing residencies here and there and trying to start up a career. I've heard some horror stories. So I guess the advice you're giving out is pretty relevant. And 1/3 is enough time.
And it's from personal experience also. It's just that once you develop the third, you will definitely become really good at what you're doing. So
very relevant suggestion. Thank you for that. But I'm hoping, right, your new job is also treating you the same way you want it, as in you're able to do 1/3 of your day's work and do it well, 1/3 of the time of your day, I must say. Perfect. All right. Now on to some cricketing topics. So first, I think we should have a quick review of the Afghanistan-Pakistan ODI series. So did you get a chance to see that second ODI at all, Manju?
Yeah, I read about it later on. So that it was a thriller and like Pakistan nearly like snatched the defeat from the jaws of victory.
Or was it the other way around? Pakistan snatched victory from the jaws of defeat.
Snatched victory from the, yeah. They snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. Yeah.
Fair enough. I only saw the highlights. I couldn't catch the game live. When you see there were some critical points in the last 7 to 8 overs where I thought Afghanistan, you know, even after they dismissed Shaheen Shah Afridi, if they had held their nerve, I thought they would have probably run away winners with about 5 or 8 runs in the end. Right? It was the number of runs that Shadab Khan really played a gem of an innings, but it was the number of runs he was able to take, continue to, you know, milk those runs, tip and run. So I think it was just a little bit of inexperience of the faster bowlers, right? And I think Abdul Rahman, especially, you know, him leaking a lot of runs towards the end, that made that real difference. Even Shadab Khan was a run out going for that, you know, that non-existent run. But then I thought Naseem Shah held his nerve. And it's been special, Naseem Shah versus Afghanistan, right? I think it was Asia Cup that where he beat them with those sixes in the last over. He again did something very special for his team. But I think Afghanistan will walk away very disappointed.
Yeah, because they have been like hot and cold. So, and it's like not being able to get rid of the tailenders. But nowadays, like, you don't have tailenders anymore. So apart from India, like you can always argue that India has 3 number 11s. But then, like at least Pakistan, they have shown great depth. So when again faced with the depth, like the discipline was somewhere missing in the bowling. So that ended up like they ended up leaking too many runs.
Right. I mean, even when you look at, you know, the ball by ball towards the end, they started the last over with 11 needed Pakistan and Shadab did not have the strike. Well, he was run out backing up, right? So that's a ball, you know, that's a ball wasted as well. So that left 5 balls, but then Naseem Shah hit a boundary to win it. And even when you see that 6 and that 4 that Shadab hit leading up to the last over, those were the killer blows. I thought, you know, 8 balls left, 26 runs or 27 runs to win, you would expect most teams to walk away from their winner. So, lot of credit to the way he played, first of all, to Shadab. But then it was not good bowling. Full tosses, 2 full tosses you bowl. I think he was going for a Yorker. Even a good length ball well outside the off stump would have been enough, because both were legs, said hits, big hits. I dare say the last one could have been a no ball. So I thought it was a no ball in the replay, but I think that's just the learning. But then when you look at the last game, Pakistan did enough, right? So again, Babar Azam and Rizwan set it up and Aga Salman again showed a little bit of firepower, but Afghanistan was strangely sort of in control. Only towards the end with Mohammad Nawaz and Aga Salman batting, they lost their control. But then those were again those 20 crucial runs. The target crossed 250 and went well beyond to 268. I think in this case, Fareed Ahmed was the guilty party, because Mujibur Rahman went for a few runs, but then Fazal Haq, Faruqi and Gulbadin Nayab was brought back. They were okay. But at the end, Fareed Ahmed, I think, way too many runs. So they don't have that that maturity to under stressful conditions. Shahidullah took way too many balls, but there was nobody supporting him, right? The middle order sort of fell away. Gulbadin Nayab or Mohammad Nabi, Rashid Khan, whom you expect will probably be able to do a few things. I think in the end, it was the game was decided well in advance. 7 for 97, you think the game is done, right? And after that, Mujibur Rahman simply hit out, had some fun. But were they really in ever in danger of winning that game or ever in danger of actually losing the game if you're a Pakistani fan?
No, somehow, like, you know, they are. I know we don't analyze teams like Afghanistan that much, like how we analyze India. So the problem is sometimes they are also struggling to find the correct combination. Like they have a lot of capable bowlers, but they also still are missing somewhere in that number 7-8 time. Like 7-8. If you look at the 2019 World Cup team, so they had that balance in the lower order. Like Gulbadin himself was like in a different zone that time. So he was batting, bowling, fielding, captaining, everything. So now under Ashmat, they have to find that person who can do the role. because we are faced with a subcontinental tournament, it can be a spin bowling all round role, apart from Rashid. Because all the focus will be on Rashid. And even Mujib batting is quite handy. That way. So
yeah.
Probably in the lower order, they need someone to step up.
Farid can bat, but I don't think he can score at any fast clip. He's more of a, he looks like somebody who can hold one end of the bat well enough.
That's what we were labeling these Pakistani bowlers as tail enders, but then they have upped their game. They are now able to hit sixes consistently. They have been doing it. And if necessary, if the situation demands, they are able to unleash the big hitting. So, unfortunately, even with India, we currently don't have any players who are capable of that. Even Shami or anyone, they are still ultimately, they still not cross that line to become a capable big hitter. So that is what we would miss definitely, going into the Asia Cup or the World Cup.
That's a very relevant point, but I think the powers that be, you know, the management as well as the captain would probably be aware. And well, you can only do so much at a later part of your career to suddenly, you cannot suddenly become a great batsman.
Yeah.
But, you know, we are hoping what you said, they are aware of this and they sort of plan their batting order also in such a way that there's at least, there's somebody still available towards the end of the game. At least one of the middle order batsmen is anchoring so that he's able to at least talk sensibly. Most of the times it's just about talking to the tailenders. I was able to do it a couple of times this season for my team. Well, not very successfully, it must be said, but we did what we could, right? So most of the time it's about keeping your head, still scoring at the same scoring rate that you tried to score at. Unless it's a very tall chase, you still try to keep going and try to consume all the balls you have left. Right? Mostly try to see where you can get. If it's a chase, you sort of plan it in a very clinical way. Right? You say, we need 8 runs an over. Let's start counting. At the end of 4 balls, how many do you have? How many do we need? Something literally like this, right? It's about communicating and communicating clearly, especially when there's a tailender at the other end. Sometimes it doesn't pan off or doesn't pay off, but the idea is to continue to try and not give up. Right? Continue to try and continue to evolve that way. It's only possible as long as there is a full batsman or somebody who thinks he's a full batsman at the other end, right? So I think India are already planning it that way, that people like Pandya, people like even Ishan Kishan, if he bats lower in the middle order, I don't know who will bat. Somebody like that who might, Jadeja especially might stay, right? Or Shardul. There is some thought process there, but let's see how that goes. But you have to say Pakistan, they would be very happy to clinch the series clean, because that also shows that, you know, there's a bit of muscle coming through. You have some people who can bat slowly, like Imam ul Haq, Babar Azam, Mohammad Rizwan. They're not really fast batsmen, but Babar, he showed in the Asia Cup, right? That we'll get to that, but that he'll need a lot of balls for that. So you also then expect people like Saud Shakil, Aga Salman, Shadab Khan, and Iftikhar. I'm really excited by the amount of muscle they're offering, really the hard hitting. Do you think then, you know, we can switch easily over to the Asia Cup and you can also analyze from that perspective. Pakistan will be a dangerous team then in the Asia Cup for you, based on their performances so far in these two games and Bangladesh?
Yeah, if you look at the bowling attack, they have the maximum variety.
Hmm.
So they have all bases covered as far as the bowling attack is concerned. So what is left is they have to post good enough totals on the board. That is, if their template is going to be like batting first and defending score. So that is if it's in their favor, definitely that they'll be become a quite a difficult, it will become the side to beat in the Asia Cup. That is because the others are just feeling for their combinations, and including us, like we've gone with a truckload of steamers to the Asia Cup now. So
right.
That is what happens, what comes of it, that's another, totally another discussion. But then they seem to have a settled combination. So I don't think they will make many wholesale changes, and they will continue this. More or less this team, maybe the odd rest to Shaheed here and there. That too, most of the time we find that they play through. So only thing, I think Shaheed recovering from that injury and coming into full throttle. So they may want to save him a bit. So otherwise they are they have a lot of backup, and each type of attack is covered. So for a subcontinental tournament, where many times the pitch is not in the equation, they have a good attack. They have bowlers who attack the sub. So, provided their batting clicks, they'll be a very strong team in the coming.
Fair enough. I understand where you're coming from, but also their spin contingent is pretty experienced. And you would expect that spinners going at, you know, five and a half runs an hour, they're doing a decent job in subcontinental conditions. because you would expect spinners, all teams will play comfortably. Most teams will also be able to even attack one or two spinners, especially a spinner who may or may not be, you know, be able to deliver that restrictive lines all the time. But that's going to be a very, very interesting combination. You're right, because they showed that also in the first game of the Asia Cup. If you were to now switch over to the Asia Cup, you see that, you know, they started slow. So Babar Azam and Mohammad Rizwan, they were batting slowish. I remember their run rate was very close to, you know, very close to four, maybe 4.2 an over. So if you see, even when Mohammad Rizwan has been dismissed, you could say it's 4.7 an over. They had lifted the run rate very decently between him and Babar. But then that partnership between Babar and Iftikhar made a real difference. Because I thought if Nepal could keep Pakistan to under 250, 260, they may actually have a chance. But then Babar Azam is so experienced and so good a batsman. If he bats any amount of time, he will make up the difference. Right? And that's exactly what he did. A fantastic 151 out of just 131 balls. A lot of big hits towards the end. And I think Iftikhar played out and out attacking cricket. So that partnership, so from 4 for 124 when Aga Salman was dismissed in the 28th over to 338 for 5 in the last over. That's like a fantastic partnership. 200 odd runs, you know, in hardly 25 overs. That's nearly 8 an over. So that's fantastic attacking cricket. That effort should be really, really appreciated from how Pakistan came through. It's Nepal, you know, you won't take them too lightly. They have a bunch of very good spinners. Sandeep Lamichane, Lalit Rajbanshi, right? They have some decent pace bowling attack. Sompal Kami, Karan Kesi are very fast. But maybe from purely from control perspective, there is a little bit more to be done there. I dare say 342 is going to be a tough chase for anybody, let alone Nepal. And it turned out to be that way. Nepal were 104 all out. Thoughts?
Yeah. So, mainly Nepal, their fielding was why they showed promise. We thought they'll make a comeback. And then again, the fielding let them down. There were some drop catches. So, that this hot and cold fielding, like, kind of, you know, really derailed their efforts in the first game. So, I don't know. What I feel is maybe Nepal is like the Zimbabwe of the 90s. So, I feel if they put the opposition in, there is some help for their bowlers. They can restrict the opposition and then maybe chase, pull off the chase. So, like, they could have actually, like, of course, they gave a lot of prominence to their fielding, and rightly so, but then definitely next game it can be better. And without fiddling with the batting order, I think this bat, though they lost this game, I think most of them came out in the regular position, like, they didn't shuffle much with the batting order. So, I think if they can do that, then they'll definitely, they can inflict an upset or two. So, but that is provided they don't drop these catches, there are these misses, and they don't let the guard down during bowling. There was a lot of, once the onslaught started, there were a lot of loose balls bowled, and the bowlers kind of lost the plot. So, but that because all that time they are little inexperienced, so they can only get better. So we can hope that more improved performance from Nepal.
Absolutely. So, before we move on from Nepal, do you think they'll win some games in this Asia Cup, maybe against Afghanistan? Or do you even expect them actually shock one of the other bigger teams, more fancy teams at all?
Yeah, definitely. They might shock India. You never know. We will go with too much experimentation, or we may have a close game. So I won't say they will like maybe shock defeat, but they can run India close. They can even trouble Sri Lanka. So there is a possibility. So you never count that out.
Well, we will probably get to that towards the end of the section. But before we go there, the other game has just finished, the game between Sri Lanka and Bangladesh. And Sri Lanka have won the game quite comfortably, must be said. So, the scores were a bit underwhelming if you're a Bangladesh fan for you. They were sort of in control of up to 5 for 141 when, you know, Mushfiqur Rahim was dismissed and then Mehdi Hasan Miraz was dismissed. And then suddenly they were 164 all out. Surprises?
Yeah, actually, Bangladesh sometimes can do Bangladesh things. So, I don't know. It's wrong to compare them to the older teams. So they are much better than the teams of old. But there used to be like batsmen with flamboyant square drives, beautiful square drives for a four, and next ball, Ashraful would be caught and slip. So, from that way, they have evolved. They have actually troubled a lot of sides. They have won in ODI cricket at least in the last 3-4 seasons. They have been a force to reckon with. So I think it's again a question of like how their batting unit handles things. There is maturity, like it's and after Mushfiqur also there should be someone. Because if you see, Mushfiqur is now the last time that 2016 T20 against Bangladesh. That was a close game where Mushfiqur was the one who was there in the middle. And from there,
right.
He has also evolved and he has become much better. So definitely, like, to finish the job or at least stay there, they could have tried a little better. But they just went down in a heap. So that is something in the World Cup, they can come back to trouble them. The same problem.
Look, Pathi Rana was the difference there. I think he worked out Mushfiqur Rahim, right? Mm-hmm. That was unexpected. I saw the dismissal. I was just taking a break and I saw that, you know, he bowled a 2 or 3 card trick where there was a full ball followed by a bouncer and Mushfiqur Rahim thought he was going to hit that and beat third man, but he hit straight to third man. I think two dismissals that really stood out for me. One was Shakibul Hasan's dismissal where the ball came on much faster than he had imagined. And before he could get into position to play the ball hit his glove and went into the keeper's hand. That was an excellent take by Mendes, by the way, behind the stumps. It was more of the ball catching the mitt, but he put the mitt out there. So the credit goes to him, per se. And of course, I think the real difference was there, right there, where, you know, he took out Shakib Al Hasan and Taskeen Ahmed, and more importantly, Mushfiqur Rahim. He really made that difference. Mustafizur Rahman is probably a proper number 11 and not a lot to be said there. But that difference, right? Pathi Rana, that the ball comes on. One. First of all, the action is a bit different. So you don't expect the ball to be released that early on in that action. And because of which the ball comes on to you that much faster. And you are not prepared for it. At least Shakib was not. And we saw that. And it cost him his wicket. Right? And also, I thought Kasun Rajita bowled with a lot of control. Mahesh Teekshana and Dhananjaya De Silva. So, mainly in the early overs, I saw a little bit of that as well. I just kept an eye on the score and from time to time, I saw an over here and there. I saw basically Mahesh Teekshana and Dhananjaya De Silva was just bowling these floaters. He didn't even impart much turning on the ball. He just kept floating the ball up and pitching it on a length. The ball was almost carrying on with the arm most of the time. But the pitch was sort of dual nature. And he let the ball sort of do whatever it wanted off the pitch of a good length. We saw that the same ball stayed low and went under the bat of a batsman. The next one came on, zipped on from the same place. And sort of similar ball that was delivered, right? So, he used the conditions very well there, Dhananjaya De Silva. I thought that kept Bangladesh down. They couldn't get any momentum going into the first 20 overs of their innings. And the moment Pathi Rana was introduced, sort of he then soaked up all that pressure initially where they went after him for the first 2 to 3 overs. Then when he stuck back, he killed the game off. This is the way I saw it play out. But then when it comes to their batting, any observations? So Dimuth Karunaratne is back and he's opening.
Yeah, this time they have a lot of seasoned, they have their seasoned campaigners with them, right? Whether it is Dhananjaya, now he's also become a senior player. But they need them to, like, again, collectively do well. So, I think Sri Lanka also is a little bit has been up and down. Even in their Matthew Vera, he used to be like a little hot and cold. So the main thing for them is, like, again, like how, like at the risk of being repetitive, like if you see Pakistan's template, a solid foundation, and followed by a, you know, little acceleration. So they need people to. So I think Karunaratne can give that in the at the beginning, but again they need people to accelerate for them. So, same thing. Later when we discuss India also, the same thing we will discuss. But for Sri Lanka, maybe we need a little solid start and first to later on to avoid collapses and they can have a better acceleration throughout the inning to get to a better score.
Mm. So, for me, the worry is more about the middle order for me for Sri Lanka because Pathum Nisanka has shown good maturity. You have the solidity that Karunaratne can provide. Kusal Mendes is back and Sadira Samara Vikrama, both of these, they have shown that they want to be here, right? For me, it falls on Charita Salanka, Dhananjaya De Silva and the skipper, the Suchanaka. Sort of the lower middle order and the people who will sort of finish the innings. Dunit Vellalage can bat, right? And all of these people, they provide good finishing capability. So it's mostly depending on how quickly and how well they can finish. But you're right, setting up a good platform, right? So that's why they have brought Dimuth Karunaratne. So to finish off also from the bowling perspective, you have Mahesh Teekshana and Mathish Pathi Rana now as the sort of surprises and you have sort of people like Dhananjaya De Silva, Kasun Rajita. And I still think, you know, they have enough. There's no Vanindo Hasaranga. They are probably the most injury hit team. I think they kept losing players left, right and center before the start of the Asia Cup. Do you think all those people injured out will have such an impact from Sri Lankan perspective, or will Sri Lanka manage well enough?
They just manage, but I know, of course, Hasaranga being injured is like is definitely one of the trump cards. Recently, he's a very improved fielder, and even batting, if his mind is at the ground, he can definitely hit a few big hits. So, he is a complete package for them. So, definitely, he has more value nowadays in other specialty, apart from his primary, that is, apart from being a good spinner. So, that definitely, they will miss the quality. But it's an opportunity for them to try the other spinners too. So before the World Cup, it's a good thing. And I also feel he shouldn't come back too soon, that he may get injured again. So that's the problem. Hopefully, they are managing his injury properly, and there is adequate time for him to recover. So that immediately again, if he's made to suddenly like come like KL, what happened to KL Rahul? Then again, he's ruled out for the 3 matches. So that shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, also their fast bowlers, Kumara and Chamira, are injured badly. And we don't even know if they'll be fit in time for the World Cup, they're saying. That's for me a big blow.
So, I'm worried that, you know, if Patirana and Tikshana took too much workload, that also shouldn't be, they should break down before the World Cup. So, they need, that way they need to manage the workload effectively. So that, to avoid, like, avoid injuries to any main player. Like, we should maybe try to get in some newer faces rather than risk them in some games which are not important. For example, if they, suppose they don't progress to the knockout stage or something of Asia Cup, or suppose there is an inconsequential game, I think they should rest one of Patirana and Tikshana to keep them fresh for the future.
I mean, with only two games to play, are any games inconsequential for any of the teams, do you think?
No, the format is such that when the Super 4 starts and
Exactly. So I think we should then, from this perspective, have a quick chat about the Indian squad as well. Look, India played their first game against Pakistan, the all-important game straight away, right? And somebody was joking recently, Asia Cup is just, you know, it's about India-Pakistan games and the rest of it fits around it. Somebody even was joking about the World Cup being like that. But coming away from all that chat, so do you think India are in a good position now, saying that they are going to take Pakistan straight away, and Pakistan is showing a lot of maturity, and they have come off a very competitive series where they took on Afghanistan, a tough Afghanistan team must be said. So how do you see this matchup shaping up? So basically it's the game on second?
It will be the cliched statement that it will be India's batting and Pakistan's bowling. So that's what it has come to again. So it depends on like whether how Pakistan's batting is the next issue, but it's like how our batsmen shouldn't collapse against Pakistani attack. So that is the primary thing. So I hope that we are able to at least post a good total if we bat. And while chasing under the light, so it may be a little difficult. I don't know, if they win the toss, maybe India should bat first. It will help them to settle into this tournament. So they may think otherwise based on the conditions, but usually it's better to bat first and have some rest and then go for the field second. But depending on how the wicket will be, then the team management will decide for them. But definitely, like, we don't take Pakistan on a regular basis. So right. That is the bigger factor. Like, we don't play these bowlers in any league. And we don't play the league these bowlers play in. So none of our players go and play Big Bash or CPL, so that they know what these Pakistani teamers are like. So without having a look, it's going to be difficult. And plus, if we have Rohit at the top, who is going to be with the versus left-arm seamer, so that matchup also will come into play.
Right. Now, all valid conversations and valid observations, but I was more thinking of also in terms of, yeah, the bowling that India might take in, right? Bumrah, Shami would be starters, I would say. Maybe even Siraj up to a point, I would say he's a starter. Then if you were to look at it, you have maybe room for two spinners. So, will it be Patel and Jadeja, or would you go with Jadeja and maybe Kuldeep Yadav?
It's better to go with variety. So, like, you have variety, so limited variety, use it. So, you can go with Jadeja and Kuldeep. So, that will be a little better. And off late, like what we've seen of Kuldeep, even the short Ireland series, there's been an increase in air speed, and there is a little bit of less predictability to what he's bowling. So even his release points have slightly changed. So I think it's all for the better. He's having more control.
Right.
So it's better that you go with him. Okay, if he goes for runs, then that's it. So be it. But you should try to have like the ball spinning both ways to be ready for both kinds of opposition. And plus, there are some left-handers in Pakistani lineup. So it's better to have a bowler with the ball spinning away from them. I know this, many people would disagree with this matchup in T20s many times. Even I have criticized this kind of matchup, like having an off-spinner to a left-hander and all those things. So, yeah, but then in ODIs, I would definitely say that it's better to have a spinner with the ball going away. So he can attack more, he can set some attacking fields and try to, in the middle overs, try to get to the ball.
So then the top order, right? So with KL Rahul not being able to be, not being able to play the top two games in the Asia Cup, then Ishan Kishan fits straight back in. So it's be Rohit and Ishan to open, do you think? Followed by Gill, then Kohli, then Shreyas, then Surya, or do you see it in another way?
Yeah, so because it is like Kohli is coming in at four, we have to discuss whether this is a long-term arrangement and he's going to continue in the World Cup and come at four. So that is the first thing. So if he's not willing, then it is, that means if he's not comfortable, then it's better to bat him at his regular position. And he need a new number, versus three. And if you need a new number four, you have to decide whether between Surya and who is it going to be. So if it is Surya, we have to give him a run till the World Cup, so we can establish some confidence coming in at four. So that should be the forward. But if they agree, Kohli is also happy, then I think Kohli is the best bet at number four. I may be wrong because a lot of disagreements can be there. But I think if he is the best batsman, he can control, dictate the pace of the game. He has that ability because he is a proverbial chase master. So definitely, he's at that stage in the career where he can definitely change things around with that approach. So if you want to shepherd the starting lineup, so that way.
Would you be tempted to maybe swap Shami or Siraj for Shardul, or would you go in with these three, Shami, Siraj and Bumrah?
Yeah, so that depends on like whether you want to, an extra batsman. So that is depends on the thinking, what is Rahul Dravid thinking, which is like quite difficult to tell from the outside. But are they thinking that we have this many batsmen, they will do the job? Then I think it's better to go with a full team attack. And if they feel that maybe we'll need that cushion, then we'll have to swap maybe Siraj for Shardul or Shami for Shardul. But then we have to decide how many overs will Shardul bowl. Is he going to get a full quota, or Hardik and Shardul will share how many overs?
Correct.
So that also has a difference.
I don't see Hardik starting simply because I counted out six batsmen and five bowlers. That makes it 11 already. But maybe you might be tempted to maybe rest one of Shreyas Iyer or Surya, because Surya has not had a really good run in the ODIs. He accepts that. So maybe Pandya starts ahead of Surya then for you, or Shreyas, Pandya starts ahead of Shreyas or Surya for you. That's another option.
Yeah, so now I'm we are a little bit compelled now because Shreyas is coming out of injury. You need him to get maximum game time. Like, I know just some time back I said coming back too soon can cause injuries again. But then now that if you are the fitness is there and physio has told he's good to go, the report is there, then he should be getting maximum game time in how we plan to use it, whether at number 6 or 5. So that will give him time to get steady.
All right. We have a pretty good understanding of how India would go. I'm very curious how they would come the morning of 2nd of September. But it's going to be again fantastic game, we're hoping. But your thoughts on who will win that derby?
So for that, I would always like India to win. But I think I'll go for like a very close game with a last over finish and India winning while chasing. So let us see how it goes.
All right. Let's see if that comes to pass. I have a feeling it will be matchups, right? Naseem Shah versus Kohli and Shadab and, the spinners versus Surya and or people like Ishan Kishan. It's going to be interesting. Rohit versus Shaheen, what you already highlighted. It's going to be very, very close, I think. So let's see. It's very tough to call it. But, as a fan, this is the one match where I find it tough to call, but I'm hoping India comes out the winner.
And you mentioned that Shadab, if he's you see the matchup of same kind also. Shadab versus Kuldeep. Shadab is a different league as a batsman.
Correct.
So it's like make the 11. You have to do something really dramatic, like five or something, to neutralize that effect, including the wicket of Shadab.
Right.
So that is how when multidisciplinary players come into the fore, rather than like we have a team of specialists and they have a lot of good mix of players.
Okay, let's see how that comes to pass. Now, if you were to move on, look at the other T20I series that are underway. So, a very youngish looking Australia, led by Mitchell Marsh in this case, took on South Africa. And does the result surprise you at all? They trampled them. I mean, I think Mitchell Marsh is known as Bison, right? For his huge head, apparently. Yeah. And I think he just simply trampled South Africa all by himself.
Talking about Bison, we were once chased by Bison when we were going on a safari.
Holy cow.
So Bison is something you don't mess with. After reading up a bit, I came to know that the head of the pack, he has a very majestic, they have a mane.
Yeah.
Which is like a center partition here and two horns on both sides, which are like larger than the rest. So they are the ones to watch out for the herd.
Correct.
So definitely Mitchell Marsh's leadership has been really good. You can safely say that.
Also, I was able to only see the highlights here. So I thought Tim David has made such a big impact all of a sudden. You know, Mitchell Marsh was destructive, but Tim David was unbelievable in that partnership. So first of all, Australia started like a steam train, right? Matthew Short and Mitchell Marsh. So even when Matthew Short was dismissed, it was not even 5 overs. So score was nearly 70. That's the first thing. Josh Inglis couldn't do much. Travis Head couldn't do much. Well, fine. That's okay. But you have Marcus Stoinis to follow, Tim David to follow, and Glenn Maxwell is injured out. What a 2011 this will be, that, you know. And then you have people like, again, speaking of depth, right? Sean Abbott. And Tanvir Sangha can bat, by the way. Nathan Ellis, they can all bat. Yeah. Right? And then Aaron Hardy, very, very useful all-rounder to have in your squad. Right? So, again, all of these people coming really good. And then just making enough of a score that, you know, this is not going to be an easy chase. And, well, South Africa also have sort of a B attack. It's not their first choice attack. You have Marco Jansen and Lungi Ngidi leading it, the attack. And Gerald Coetzee, sort of, they're trying to see what he can do, because they're playing at home. Lizard Williams sort of on the fringes. Tabre Shamsi is probably the real experienced guy in that attack. But nobody was able to keep the runs down. Everybody went for more than 10 and over. That's very rare to see, I think, in a T20. But then when it came their turn to bat, except for Reza Hendricks, they were completely blown away. Maybe Rasif Anderson a little bit. By the time Marco Jansen came to play, there was not a lot left in the game. Do you feel surprised at how well Spencer Johnson, Sean Abbott and Marcus Stoinis were able to start off?
Yeah, that is something you don't expect. Australia, mostly the regular bowlers not in there. So, but it was a good effort from. But South Africa really, they wouldn't know like what hit them. Apart from Marco Jansen in the end, there is nothing much to show. It's a thing of low scores in the card.
Did you see how Spencer Johnson and Tanvir Sangha, the debutants, bowled? Was it impressive? Did you think it was something quite good?
Yeah, Tanvir Sangha, I definitely think it will be too early from my side to say, but then he can have a long-term potential if in the post-war era, if you can call it, sadly, war is not there. So someone to keep the art alive. So with due respect to Fawad Ahmed and company who have played the trade in Big Bash and stuff.
Right.
So if we can have somebody who can be a regular in all the formats, so this boy definitely looks promising. Expect him to mature close to 30, another few seasons to go. And of course, due respect to all the leg spinners before, and even Zampa is a very good leg spinner, no doubt about that.
Right.
But someone for the long haul who can become a household name for Australia. So let's see, fingers crossed, touch wood for that.
Absolutely. Youngster, real star, already has played the 100 and so on. So he has seen some cricket around the world and he's shown that maturity. I mean, he was so calm. You saw it. I mean, he had a large total to defend and the game was more or less dead and buried. But then to take out the middle order entirely by himself, right? Markram, Brevis and Stubbs. Also a couple of youngsters trying to make a name for themselves. You know, the future of South African middle order batting, you might say. Right? That was a wonderful battle. And I think Spencer Johnson, he's good. I think if you remember, there was a guy, there was a fast bowler, thin, tall, fast bowler.
Nathan Bracken,
there you go. That's the guy I was looking for, right? So Nathan Bracken, yep. Spencer Johnson sort of reminds me of Nathan Bracken, but I think he's much faster than that, right? He's probably more in Dirk Nanas mold that way.
Yeah.
And again, very, very exciting to see, you know, these people coming in and making an impact. So I look forward to this series because the Australia-South Africa is always a series of needle. You never take your eyes off the action there. So they may have been well beaten in the first one, but I expect South Africa to come hard and come and win the game, at least one or two games in the series. So it's going to be very interesting for me. Now, quickly switching over to the New Zealand-England T20 series. Did you get a chance to catch up at all?
No, that I couldn't watch it. Just followed the scores.
I thought, except for Glenn Phillips, England looked so much better. I think New Zealand are sort of coming out of a winter break, or they're not really gelling well together. People have played all over the place, right? Finn Allen, Devon Conway, Tim Seifert. These are all people who've been playing in the leagues out there. But I don't think it's the same to play at the top level, right? And I think they were caught a bit unprepared. So people like Luke Wood, Sam Curran and Brendan Carr have been playing the 100, and they were really on top of their game, I thought, England bowling attack, right at the top. So they struggled to even go at six and a half runs an over after the first 10, 12 overs. And even when Daryl Mitchell was dismissed, they were hardly going at six and a half runs an over. I'm talking 12th over right now, right? So that was very weird to see. But then a little bit of a enterprising, some runs towards the tail, and they gave themselves sort of a total, but you never thought it's going to be a challenge for England, did you?
England with their depth, they always, these totals will never trouble them, unless like you can have some really spectacular bowling score. And Brydon Carr was very impressive for them, for England.
Correct.
So I think they are really, England, they have shocking depth to just, you know, if there is somebody who can halt maybe Pakistan's charges, England. So every time someone is rested, there are people lost to injury. So there is a new guy who comes in, and he's like equally good, if not better.
Mm.
So that is something, you know, credit to their talent finding the program. And of course, I think they had Mo Bobat as the chairman of their high performance selection committee. So they seem to scout these guys, and they are match ready each time, and they come and perform. So that is very credit to them.
Right. And also, you know, you might want to say people like Will Jacks, he opened the batting, but he was actually a spinner who played tests for England, right? So he's played when England toured Pakistan, he was a part of that team. But then when you turn around, he's also a very competent batsman. And he was opening the batting and did what was needed, right? And then David Malan has been there or thereabouts. He's sort of the banker in their top order in the T20s. And he was, for a long time, also the number one ranked batsman in T20s. You never forget that. So between him and Harry Brook, they killed the game off very competitively. There was not a lot left, 14 overs. The game was done and dusted. Do you see New Zealand being able to make a comeback, challenge England at all?
Yeah, mainly it would depend on Daryl Mitchell. So, England is also one of the previous champions. So, if he comes good along with that batting order, then definitely it will make some difference to at least posting a total. And along with that, guys from the league, you cannot say like whether how much informed they are, how well they are hitting it. So they might just spring a surprise. But Daryl Mitchell being a senior member, maybe you can expect a little more from him. So that way, in the next game, maybe.
England will always bring their best. They'll have their best like Luke Wood, and they'll have their best in terms of spinners as well. You forget that Moeen Ali, Adil Rashid are actually stalwarts when it comes to the white ball game, right? And then you would see they will always be more than a handful as far as, you know, any team taking on England will be concerned. But then you have the likes of Luke Wood, Sam Curran, and also Liam Livingstone was not at all required almost in this game, right? Much like Will Jacks. But he did a very good job. You forget that he's a very capable top-order batsman. But in this case, he's like an all-rounder. He bowled his 4 overs for 25. I think nobody knows. Even he doesn't know what he will bowl when he's about to deliver. Right? So that's very nice to see. And you're right. The depth that they have is very, very enviable. So all in all, England will be the team to beat in the coming days, looks like, especially 2024 World Cup and so on. So let's keep an eye on that. Now, moving on. Let's have a quick look at some of the news off the cricketing field. So first, let's start with the Maharaja Cup. We had a prediction in the previous episode where our guest Ramchandra had made a prediction saying which team will take the trophy. And as he had predicted, Hubli Tigers went on and took the trophy, winning the semifinal and final. Thoughts on the Maharaja Cup for you, Manju?
Yeah, so like just you know, continuing from where Ramchandra said, mostly I also follow it in a way that not for any one side, because I don't have any preference to any franchise.
Mm.
So basically, I try to find out the familiar players, you know, where they are. Like, say, Shreyas Gopal, Mayank, look at how they are doing. So Karun Nair had got 100, so that made me happy. But I don't know, like in the previous episode itself, maybe Karun Nair is done for now.
Mm.
So we can only hope whatever domestic player is left will do well.
Right. But also people like Ravi Kumar Samarth, whom we had sort of forgotten. But then you never forget these people simply because of what they're capable of. And Ravi Kumar Samarth was being spoken up as potentially, you know, the next test match opener. I mean, maybe in a few years, there are enough people in the queue already. But this guy was capable of a lot. But then a lot of other people overtook him. People like Gill and others, they overtook him comfortably. Also, there are a couple of forgotten players. If you remember Jagdish Asuchit, right? Yeah. People who are very well known and who could do a lot of things. And you would expect, you know, this guy would still be competing because he would look for an IPL contract. He's a very good fielder. He's a capable lower middle order batsman. And of course, his primary skill is a very competent left-arm spinner, right? So these people, they have a story to tell. And also people like Gautam, right, who led a team himself, but has sort of gone off the boil. On the verge of playing for India, we thought he was. But then he might struggle to get a regular team game even in an IPL team now. So there are some people who will want to make a point for themselves. People like Lavneet Sisodia, sort of up-and-coming people. Mohammad Taha, very, very good and part of the winning team and man of the series, Mohammad Taha, right? People like Krishnan Srijit, sort of the next cab of the rank if you're looking at a top-order batsman like Nikin Jose and so on for Karnataka team, right? So it's going to be very, very interesting. So a lot of talent being thrown up. People like Manish Pandey showing their worth again, scoring a 50 at better than strike rate of 200 in the final. And well, Karun Nair sort of countered him. Karun Nair was going in the similar direction, 37 of 20 before he was dismissed. And I thought it was a much, much closer game where the difference was just 8 runs, right? And but it did a good job of showcasing the talent that was on offer and what is possible. Karnataka is still quite a powerhouse when it comes to local domestic cricket in India. And they are showing why it's the case. And that's nice to see, especially considering you stay there and I come from that part of the world. It'll always keep you happy. And it was not played a couple of seasons, right, because of COVID and other things. So a lot of people who are showcasing, who are waiting, and they did the bit. They did their bit there. And it was nice to see. Any final thoughts on the Maharaja Cup, Manju?
Yeah, so the final thought is just we have to credit one Maharaja. It happens to be his birthday today.
Ah.
So I think
yes,
behalf of umpire and Ramchandra, I wish Javagashinath a very happy birthday.
Perfect.
So just like since his birthday, I just hope that one of these two guys, either Vaishakh or Vidwat Kaverappa, you know, can achieve at least a small percentage of what he has for India probably. So we'll hope that we get a good fast bowler from Karnataka.
Absolutely. I mean, both of these are being touted as, you know, long-term prospects in the red ball game. But I dare say they also have good white ball skills. So
I can't say much because I only watched their red ball exploit for like one match for 2 days. The Duleep Trophy.
Right.
So that's a very small sample size. Mm. But definitely they would hit the bat hard and hurry the batsman. It was quite exciting to watch. Obviously, they had opened only one stand for the public. So from that, you can only get a side-on view. So the kind of length, the hard length they bowl. So just wishing them all the best. So it would be thrilling if they are able to replicate the success in the higher level.
Fair enough. It's always a challenge, right? People like Abhimanyu Mithun were all very, very promising, but to be able to translate it to the next level where people are at the next level of prep, right? So that's always going to be tough as well.
Incidentally, it so happens, Abhimanyu Mithun is also a part of a list with Srinath for taking a hat-trick on first-class debut.
Wow, okay.
So, like, from those heights, like, I also expected Abhimanyu Mithun to be, like, a long-term, but sadly, it didn't happen. So, with every generation, we just hope that one of them breaks through and becomes a servant of Indian cricket for, like, how Srinath was.
Absolutely. But I think Srinath at his best was even bowling 150 kph, I think. I don't know if any of these people are capable of such speeds. I've seen Vijay Kumar Vaishak bowling 140s. So it's not bad, but then you don't know, right? Whether he's able to sustain that over longer periods without really injuring himself badly and so on. Let's see how that goes. All right, now on to the 100. So both the men and women's finals were played and we have the winners. So how much of the 100 were you able to catch? Let me start there.
Mostly on scores. I haven't watched any games live. So I'm still to actually really open out to the 100.
Mm.
But still I do follow some news and
Right. So Smriti Mandana played in the 100, but she's not going to play in the BBL, women's BBL, we heard. But then she was a part of the winning team. And you had Danny Wyatt and people like Georgia Adams and Freya Kemp who did enough. So in the women's 100, if you saw 140, 145 was a very challenging score. And the Southern Braves, who went on to win their first 100 trophy, they made 139, which was going to be very challenging. And their bowlers are very, very, you know, sort of well-drilled. Lauren Bell, Anya Strupsol. So people like Anya Strupsol, she walked away into the sunset, winning a trophy in her last game. She had already announced that she would retire. And she's sort of a real, let's just say, a real stalwart when it comes to England women's cricket. And she did that. And Chloe Treon, people like Kalea Moore, who's new, but who did fantastically well in the final, going at less than run a ball and taking 3 wickets. So it was a sort of a good combination that I thought Southern Brave had in the final, and the combination of real experience and really exciting talent. And that took them to the final comfortably. So that was very nice to see, right? And Marizan Kapp was the player of the series. So it not a lot of surprise there. She was not going to play the final, but she had done already enough beforehand. And Danny Wyatt was the player of the final. So congratulations to Southern Brave, I say. And also, well done to Anya Strupsol. And yeah, we wish her all the best in her retired life. So any thoughts on the men's game or any thoughts on the men's tournament at all? Were you able to see enough of it?
I wasn't able to catch much of the men's
game. So there, you know, again, all Invincibles. I think Surrey-based teams are having a great time currently. Surrey is also in the running for the championship, the county championship, the Division 1. And so Jason Roy couldn't do much in the final. Also, other big names like Paul Sterling, Sam Curran. But then they had a wonderful finish. I thought they were done, actually. So I sort of didn't follow it for a while. I was just listening to the commentary of the finals. Around 5 for 34, I'm like, oh, they're really sunk here, right? And I switched off. And then when I switched back on, I couldn't believe they got to 161. So Jimmy Neesham scoring at a strike rate of 172, but Tom Curran scoring at a strike rate of nearly 200. So Tom Curran really came out and did enough in the final to remind England selectors what he's capable of, right? And I dare say Manchester Originals were the real favourites at the halfway stage in that first innings. They would be really, really disappointed to have conceded 160. 155, 150 plus is always a challenging score in men's 100 as well, I read. And in spite of people like Josh Butler, Phil Salt, Wayne Madsen, they had a lot of experience there, but they couldn't make more than 147. And they're the Curran brothers with the ball, right? And I think the likes of Danny Briggs. I think Danny Briggs just bowled 1-5 ball spell, but that was very crucial. He conceded just 2 runs and took a wicket. So things like this. So Will Jacks showed all his nous in that. So between Will Jacks and Danny Briggs, they sort of shut the middle overs down completely. And that really cost, I think, Manchester Originals the trophy. And All Invincibles, congratulations on their trophy win. So just to keep an eye on how it's going, do you think other powers that be out there, Australia and Indian, the Indian cricket body, they might consider hosting their own 100 leg tournament, even at like provincial or a domestic level?
Yeah, it deserves a try. So definitely it brings unique scenarios into the game. So if you have someone who can calculate a tricky chase in 100 ball, then definitely you can identify your next finisher. Maybe I know it's wrong to mix format, so I may be guilty of that. But definitely, like, if he can manage a chase in 100 ball, maybe he can manage one in 120 ball. Just slightly different from the T20 game.
Mm.
So you may have a chance to unearth some talent which the regular system might miss out on. So that is what I mean. So if it helps to identify talent, like how David Warner is a baby of T20 cricket who later on became a test who is almost a test great. You can say arguably he's a test great, and now he's not doing well. So if that opportunity arises, there is no harm in doing it, because with the finance at hand for the BCCI, I think it is worth a shot.
I think one of the state associations may take a cue and start hosting 100 competition, even like the Maharaja Cup or something. Who knows?
In South Africa, they had in the pandemic time, they had something called three-team.
Yeah, yeah.
Three-team cricket.
I saw that. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's also something which can, you know, it can be one of the useful activities.
Fair enough. So, yeah, worth noticing. Worth noticing that maybe other, and look, shorter the better and more interesting. If you have 2 hours to kill, if you want to just go and watch something like the 100 or that three-team tournament might be more exciting for you than even 1 or 2 hours of test match cricket. That takes some following and some understanding of the game. This one is more hit and giggle, right? So it'll be fun. Let's see how that goes. All right, one last story before we close out, Manju. So it just broke news that Viacom 18 have backed the Indian cricket digital and TV media rights both for the next 5 years, 2023 to 2028. Cycle, and they've paid $720 million, right? US million dollars, 720 per match. It comes out to be a better deal from before, but overall it's a much smaller number. But does the number surprise you at all, or is it sort of unexpected lines?
It is along expected lines to a certain extent, but I think this time they seem to have realized that the game is changing, and it is more in the digital phase. So like how Jio Cinema was made free for streaming the series previously. So like that, they may target more of smaller screen users, like people who want to watch it on their mobile, like a one-to-one relationship rather than TVs. And so maybe their main target is on the online streaming.
Mm.
So I think both are almost equal to each other on a digital rights and TV rights.
Indeed.
So probably they realize that digital is becoming a bigger player. And they don't want to lose the TV also, because there are many households which still have a TV set-top box connection. So that also is included.
Fair enough. So that makes a lot of sense. And see, it's coming out to be a better deal per match. And there are only 88 matches in this cycle. And I think the World Cup rights were sold differently. The World Cup rights are not included in this. So that just makes 88 matches in this cycle, right? So that's an interesting one, and not a bad one if you are looking at it. For me, the number was a little on the lower side. I mean, just the amount of growth we see every time these sort of numbers are released, these five-year cycle numbers and so on. But nonetheless, BCCI have still come out on top in terms of how much they were going to get per game. And I think the powers that be are happy. At least that's what some of those tweets from Jay Shah and others indicate. So, well, long may it continue that Indian cricket grows from strength to strength and they use the power they have for good. What do you think, Manju?
Yeah, so BCCI at the powers, they will exist. But one thing I want to remind is Prasar Bharati, the national broadcaster.
Right.
Doordarshan, they may have some reason to, you know, look at their strategy regarding cricket. So because now they have to source the feed from Viacom 18 or any of these people who have the rights. And whether in a deferred broadcast. So I don't know, maybe what the bosses are thinking, that they could have bid for it themselves. And you know, because Doordarshan easily has the highest circulation, even if you see throughout the country. Due to the old-fashioned technology also, and they have DD free dishes are there.
Correct.
So they could have made some sort of a stride in this bidding war. But since the bids will never be revealed, we don't know what they've done. So I always feel that, you know, I remember cricket as coming through Doordarshan first. Never mind the commentators and all those things, but we know that you switch to DD and the match will be available live. So that's what. So maybe whatever sharing talks or agreement, if they don't fall out, we may get to see some series on DD also.
Right. That's a very good point you've actually made. Let's see if it comes to pass that, you know, they come to some sort of an agreement behind the scenes with Viacom. Between the two of us, I don't see DD having that kind of money. Prasar Bharati or Doordarshan matching 700 million, or even if you were to consider the TV platform rights, 350 million. I really cannot see them matching that kind of number. But yeah, who knows? Maybe because it's a government entity, maybe they may actually consider it as a good investment. and they may get good return on their rights. So let's see if this is something they may want to consider in the coming years, coming cycles. All right. Those are all the topics we wanted to discuss today, Manju. Thank you once again for being a part of the podcast.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Perfect. But before we let you go, would you like to give a shout out about all your media outlets, wherever you might be available, if somebody from this podcast, a listener or a friend, want to reach out to you?
Yeah. So my Twitter handle is @ of the Falling Sleep.
Hmm.
So Falling Sleep is a tribute to Rohan Kanai's famous shot.
Yeah.
And also would like to mention that a group of friends like Saurabh and Vallabh, they've started a YouTube channel called Crick Chatter Live.
Aha.
So you can see that handle @ Crick Chatter Live.
Fair enough. So thank you for those shout outs. And we wish Saurabh and your friend Vallabh and you as well all the best with your new endeavors, whatever you're coming up with. And I wish to have more of you. I think you also did a podcast, right? I wish to hear more of those, yeah, if and when possible.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Definitely. Anytime. It's always a very enriching discussion. So I myself enjoy it a lot. So, and also, I would tell the listeners to listen to the other episodes of Armchair Cricket Podcast. Because like as we even listen to the older episodes, we get a lot of different interesting perspectives. So I commonly listen to it because I have a Bluetooth speaker and I connect the phone. And on the way to work, I listen to most of Armchair's episodes. So I would exhort all the listeners to do the same.
Perfect. Thank you for the shout out on behalf of the podcast as well. We wish all our listeners a good day, wherever they may be listening from. And have a nice day. Bye-bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.